Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A New York man falls 300 feet from the Crater Lake Rim. An Oregon coast man uses his knee to steer while texting and crashes into a power pole. And a British man almost cuts his own head off with a chainsaw.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves for this. Is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for July 12th, 2011. A driver was using his knee to steer his pickup as he text messaged on his phone before a crash on the Oregon coast late last night. Officers say 25-year-old Brandon Wyatt told them he dropped his phone while driving his 1993 Nissan pickup just before 9:30 p.m., when Wyatt reached for his phone, his trunk jumped to the curb in front of a car dealership and slammed into a power pole. Paramedics checked Wyatt at the scene, but he refused treatment. His truck sustained major damage. He was cited on charges of careless driving, driving while suspended, and operating a motor vehicle while using a mobile communication device. A New York man sightseeing with friends survived a 300-foot headfirst plunge down a snow chute from the Crater Lake Rim to the caldera below. His complicated six-hour high-angle rope rescue required nearly 50 National Park Service workers and a local emergency medical crew. A combination of steep terrain, snow, and rockfall made for a difficult rescue. The 27-year-old went past a barrier around 10 a.m. and walked onto a snowbank along the path to the Sinnott Memorial Overlook. Here's our problem right here.
If you're on a memorial overlook, it seems like that should be your first indication that maybe you shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Also, the idea that maybe those barriers might just be there for a reason.
No, decorative.
Yeah. Witnesses said then he slid headfirst 300 feet down the snow chute.
Well done.
He was taken by Mercy Flights of Medford to the Rogue Valley Medical Center in serious condition. McCabe said Sinnott Overlook is located in an extremely steep aerial above the rim of the caldera.
By the way, on the previous story, I didn't know how long it was going to go. I was waiting for an opportunity to make some sort of Knights Who Say Me reference because he was driving with his knee and then it never presented itself.
Oh.
But know that had I had the opportunity, I would have done that.
Texters just who use... No.
FYI. Seeing there's nowhere to go. You're listening to Legion of News. It is Tuesday, July 12th, 2011 here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, Science on the March, also your entertainment news. And you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or Legion of News. Mobile.com, also available on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. We want to thank Mr. Eric D. Snyder for filling in yesterday while your husband was being perforated and spindled and folded and punctured in every conceivable way.
Yes, and I listened to the show yesterday, too, and a fine job he did.
You know, Patrick didn't seem any the worse for wear. He really just sort of...
I know, you just saw him. He actually is so much better now than he was before he got sick that it just sort of seems like, really? Do you need to be doing all this stuff? And yet...
He's the definition of... He's like some sort of human equivalent of the car that you take into the mechanic and then it stops making the ticking noise that was the reason you took it there to begin with.
Yeah.
You know? Sort of like, you know, the mechanic says, okay, that'll be $9 million and, you know, fixes everything. And, but halfway through the job, it's like you realize that the problem has just sort of vanished and you wonder if you actually need to get it done that day or not, or if you can just stall. Like when the guy at the Jiffy Lube tells you got to get your fuel filter done. You know, like, legally, I can't even let you drive out of here right now the way it is. I mean, it's it burst into flames. But it just seems to be working fine.
Yeah.
So that's the deal with Patrick.
Yeah, we went in yesterday. He got the catheter for his dialysis. So he was in the hospital. Went in 6 o'clock in the morning. Had to have him there, which is a sin against God and nature, frankly, having me have to be dressed and driving somewhere at 5:30 in the morning. And
yes, really, the impact on you is the tragedy.
It's all about me, really. As you've noted, he was fine. He's okay with it. Yeah, whatever. I'm like going, God, God, God. So, but anyway, I get him that. I pick him up later, get him home, and he's like, and I'm going, well, how are you feeling? How are you doing? He's like, I'm okay. Well, does it hurt? I mean, they stuck a tube in his jugular vein, and he now has, like, things sticking out of his chest. He's like, no, it's okay. It's fine. It aches a little bit. And I'm like going, you know, I like, you know, get a hangnail, and I want morphine.
Patrick just kind of lopes along through life, doesn't he?
Yeah. Right. He said, could I have one of your Vicodin? And I was like, well, yes, of course you can. I was like, does it hurt? He's like, no, not really, but, you know.
Why not?
Yeah.
They're there. The Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
The federal government is moving ahead on a plan requiring gun dealers in 4 states to report sales of high-powered rifles. It's aimed at stopping the flow of guns to Mexican drug cartels. Dennis Hennigan with the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence says it can be an effective tool.
These are highly suspicious sales, so they give real-time notice to law enforcement about who is buying all these guns and which dealers tend to sell a lot of guns.
So we're going to stop the flow to and from Mexican drug cartels by passing laws against whatever it is that they're dealing.
Right.
That seems to have worked really well with the drugs themselves.
No, we're going to stop illegal gun sales going back and forth over the border by requiring gun dealers to report sales to actual legal private citizens who are following the rules.
Because it seems like if you're a cartel, that's the first thing you're going to do is actually going to call up the government and inform that you've just purchased a truck full of AK-47s.
Yeah, you're going to go to the gun broker in Phoenix, in downtown Phoenix, and you're going to buy like 3 guns, and you're going to fill out all the paperwork.
Exactly, yes.
Hennigan says the plan makes sense.
The dealer and the trafficker are basically conspiring to feed guns into the illegal market. This is a pro-law enforcement measure. It is amazing to me that the National Rifle Association is going to go to court because it wants these transactions to remain a secret.
The National Rifle Association does say it plans to sue.
Here's the great thing about this story. This is another one of those stories where I can root against everybody, right? Because the NRA is obviously crazy, but the government is obviously inept and evil. So, I mean, really, it's just I don't have to take sides at all here. I can just root for the failure of everybody involved.
Yeah, this story is stupid in every single possible way.
Because the government wants you to have to register your guns and have the record of all transactions, whereas the NRA merely wants you to be able to own howitzers.
You guys can disconnect your SUVs from a DCM.
I have no idea what that soundbite was supposed to be right there. That's
is that your rifle's 3 there?
Well, you know, it claims to. Oh no, that's the shuttle noise. Nah,
no,
it's not. Now let's see if I have. Let's see if I've got the other. Rifle story. This is what? This is NRA.
No, this should be rifle's 3. It says.
But I mean, it's the cut. It's the cut from the NRA.
Yes.
Let's see if I've got that here. Wait.
It better be worth it.
It's almost certainly not going to be worth it.
Let's see. Is this Chris Cox from the NRA?
It is indeed.
All right. Let's see. He says something about blah, 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 blah. This seems
it's
like
a bad
idea
because Congress, it won't work. It's an illegal idea because they don't have the authority to do it. When the president wants a health care bill, he goes to Congress. When he wants to raise the debt ceiling, he goes to Congress. When he wants to pass gun control and he knows Congress won't pass it, he does this end run around Congress.
But just to make up for it, let's have two cuts from this guy. Here's a second cut from...
To somehow suggest that a reporting requirement to an agency that's been incompetent with regards to the same reporting is able to police this situation is just a sad reality that it's not going to work.
I wonder if the NRA is especially powerful as a lobbying organization because of the fear that they might just come to your home and machine gun you if you don't pass whatever legislation it is that they want.
I guess. I mean, Patrick has kind of explained the NRA to me in the MAC that their whole goal is to just... stand firm and not allow even one single tiny little bit of control over guns because they use the slippery slope argument that if you do one thing that actually makes sense, then step two is the government comes to everyone's house and takes their guns away.
No, not the government, just Barack Obama.
Yeah.
He personally comes to your home and melts down your weapons.
Yeah, but they were afraid of the same thing, though, when Bush was in office as well. They're just convinced that the government wants to take everyone's guns away. And so if you do something like, say, people should actually have to take safety classes before they're allowed to buy one. Like, slippery slope!
Yeah.
And you're kind of, oh, God, you people are crazy.
No, the NRA is great. They're just, I mean, I'm glad that they're there. The NRA is a bit like the ACLU or PETA in that they make... You know, it's just like for every... PETA's probably the better example, actually,
yeah.
Because I agree with the majority of the ACLU does. The NRA is sort of like PETA in that for every logical, rational, sane thing they do something else that is just completely, like, screamingly crazy, but entertaining for the rest of us to watch.
Police are investigating a recent attack in downtown Portland as a hate crime against a lesbian woman. Kayla Stone, 21, reported being attacked by a group of men and women sometime after 1 a.m. on July 3rd near Southwest 3rd Avenue and West Burnside. She told police she had seen the same group the night before when they called her a derogatory word. She said...
A quizzling?
Maybe, yes. Okay. A ne'er-do-well, yeah. They called her. She said they attacked her when they saw her the next evening. I wasn't with anybody, and I was on 3rd, and they approached me and immediately started beating me, she said. Stone, a musician and gay youth activist, said the group ran off and she sought help at a nearby club. She suffered cuts and bruises to her face and the side of her head, but none of her injuries were serious.
Where was she at?
Southwest 3rd and Burnside.
So that's like by, it's like by the Roseland or whatever, I guess, or maybe not. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Southwest 3rd and Burnside. So Southwest 3rd and Burnside would be, I guess that would be sort of like by Grendel's Coffee House, maybe, by the Imago, like that kind of area. I'm trying to figure out where she was. What is there? Because it doesn't seem like a place you... Southwest 3rd and Burnside doesn't seem like a place you'd just be hanging out, and much less running into the same group of people two nights in a row.
Yeah, and she said that one of the attackers was a Latino man with a tattoo of a teardrop under one of his eyes. So,
I'm not suggesting she made this up. I'm just saying... It does seem odd. It seems to defy the law of averages. I mean, unless it was in fact a place where people lived or something, or, you know, some sort of... Because I think there's a shelter of some kind near that area. And so maybe, you know, if it was a place of temporary residence for people, then you'd run into the same group of jackasses twice in a row. But even then, I mean, it seems like running into exactly the same group of people nearly exactly 24 hours apart just seems to defy probability.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Here's Don Taylor.
A British man almost beheaded himself with a chainsaw, and he's spoken about how he was only minutes from bleeding to death. Tree surgeon Tom Connolly, 21, had to hold his head on to survive after he cut through more than a third of his neck and severed his jugular vein in the accident at work in April.
In the hallways of Hogwarts.
His foot slipped when he was cutting a branch 50 feet up a tree, and he slid onto the 12-inch blade, slashing his neck and left arm. Tom severed nearly every blood vessel in his neck, and doctors said he was inches away from cutting through his carotid artery, which would have killed him. He lost 3 liters of blood and would have bled to death within 3 minutes if his work colleagues and emergency medical charity had not, and an emergency medical charity, which I think he was working for at the time, had not treated him so quickly. He was working with 3 colleagues to remove a horse chestnut tree in a front garden near Wisbech, Cambridgeshire. He had climbed up the tree to attach to a harness and wearing his boots, which have 5-inch climbing spikes, but he said he was halfway up cutting the tree trunk when his foot slipped and he rolled onto the chainsaw. He said, "I was left dangling in the air and I could see blood dripping from my arm. I went into shock, but the adrenaline kicked in. I screamed for help. My colleagues quickly got me out of the tree. I later realized I'd nearly cut my head off, so I'm incredibly lucky to be here today.
You know, so why his colleagues are there, and yet he's somehow tasked with holding his own head on. Although I guess maybe you don't want to turn that over to other people. That's
no.
a job you don't want to delegate. You know, you hand it to a guy who's had too many martinis at lunch, and then it just goes sideways on
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
So maybe that's that's the thing where you want to take that, so to speak, into one's own hands. You want to be looking out for that.
And apparently he says he still wants to be a tree surgeon. This hasn't put him off his chosen profession.
Well, one bad day shouldn't negate a life's work of not cutting one's own head off.
I think he'll be a lot more careful with the chainsaw from now on.
Really, that's true. By the way, and so this is, so back on the hate crime story. So I was actually viewing this, I was thinking northwest, but you said southwest.
Right.
So I was thinking on this side of the river, and it's the other side of the river, which makes more sense because that is, so that's not near like the Imago. That is actually by,
it's by
Barracuda.
Veritable quandary and things like that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's Madison. No, it's actually what I said first, by Dantes.
Okay.
So that actually makes more sense if she was there two nights in a row and ran into the same, because my whole thing was like, well, what is even in that part of town that you'd be hanging out there? But it makes more sense if it's southeast because that's downtown.
Oh,
so
okay.
So if you're either working or just attending or frequenting any clubs in that area, then I guess, because let's be honest, I mean, we've all like driven through southeast on a Friday or Saturday night, and it's the same 500 jackasses all the time.
Or
southwest, that's what I mean. But we've, you know, but you drive through there and it's just like the same cast of Jersey Shore rejects like every single weekend. So it's not like and how do I know this?
Do they come in from Gresham? And where do these people come from?
Hell, or a special vineyard somewhere where they're grown on trees and then plucked off and shaved and greased and released into the neighborhood. Because I nearly, if I happen to be downtown, like in Southwest on a weekend, it's the same group of yokels walks in front of my car every weekend anyway. So it's not like it's out of the realm of possibility that she would run into the same group of people two nights in a row. Yeah, so that makes sense. So forth. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Visitors to Olympic National Park in Washington are being urged not to urinate along trails frequented by mountain goats to avoid turning the trails into long linear salt licks and attracting more goats.
A long linear salt lick.
It's a new measure park officials are instituting as part of their revised mountain goat action plan.
How would you know if it's a trail frequented by mountain goats?
I suppose that the rangers would tell you, I guess. I don't know. The plan includes safety-inspired trail closures of 2 weeks or more and aversive conditioning of the animals when they become too aggressive.
Uh-huh. That's tasing, I think.
I think. That's like they lock them in a room and they waterboard them or something. The plan, released Thursday by the park, also urges visitors and park staff to keep at least 50 yards distance from all mountain goats, regardless of the animal's behavior. This was approved Tuesday in the wake of the October 16th goring death of Port Angeles resident Bob Boardman on Switchback Trail near Cahine Ridge. This calls for one-week trail closures in areas where goats persistently follow people and repeatedly enter campsites. It also calls for approximately two-week closures when they exhibit threatening postures when encountered on trail, and if they will not leave an area without aggressive hazing, such as shouting, arm-waving, and throwing rocks to keep them at a distance.
So this is... Okay. And so they are suggesting that you urinate where?
I guess you hold it, or you put it in a bottle or something if there's mountain goats around.
Okay. All right.
Because I guess it makes it crazy. The plan says, and this is directly from the Mountain Goat Action Plan, closures will be maintained for approximately 14 days or until no unacceptable goat behavior is observed in the area that has been thoroughly searched in three consecutive patrols covering a period of at least 1 week.
The Mountain Goat Action Plan?
That's the park's Mountain Goat Action Plan.
All right. I wonder if that's the best job to have in the park or the worst job to have. Like if you're selected for that duty where you got to sit in a room and you got to discuss whiz and how it affects goats that may or may not attack users of the trail.
They're also going to like basically haze the goats by setting off sirens and air horns and shooting rubber projectiles and beanbags.
Meanwhile,
at them.
The goats are just sitting there, you know, just living, just trying to enjoy the mountain where they have presumably been for thousands of years.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the guy bled to death after a 370-pound mountain goat followed him and then gored him in the left thigh.
Oh, mountain goats never forget.
No. No, and I remember that story, too, because they kept trying to shoo him away. Said, go away, go away. And the goat just kept following him and glaring at him angrily. And finally, and he was like, go away. And finally, the goat just went, screw you, and just gored him. So, apparently, urine deposits on the trail, says a camp spokesman. Urine deposits on the trail entice goats to use trail areas, and turn trails into long linear salt licks. In backcountry campsites in Goat Range, campers will be advised to seek sites 200 feet away from campsites on the trail for urination or to urinate in the privies.
So this is really, this is our fault for having such tasty urine. I mean, as humans, if it wasn't for just the delightful flavor and, and the notes of pepper that were contained in our urine, we wouldn't be having this this issue.
It must be very confusing for the goats because we have this apparently delicious, delicious smelling urine. And they go, hey, this must be a great place to be around. And then what do they find? Humans.
I don't think it's
who they hate.
I don't think it's confusing. I think it's that eventually they just had to go right to the source. You know what I mean?
Oh, they're just trying to open us up to get at it?
It's like taking off the top of the vending machine.
I'll bet they're full of that stuff.
I'm just going to reach inside and scoop it all out. So, and you know, and then what do they get in return? Horns and tasing.
And bean bags.
Just seems wrong. By the way, in case anybody saw this on Twitter, no, I'm not making this up. There was a woman just mere blocks from my home waving a sword at police officers about 10 minutes ago as I was on my way here. And she was shouting, and I have to thank listener who for telling me about this. Let's see, listener...
Kirill Basarab?
Listener Kirill, who said, Rick, there's a crazy lady, and this is like about 32nd and Powell in Southeast. Right now, waving a sword around and screaming at the cops, she's thrown everything out of the house. I was standing across the way, and I heard her yell something about, last time I saw him, he was doing blow off a stripper, and I don't need a man. They'll all break my heart. And then telling the cops, you're all over your head. I'm calling in the FBI. And the cops were just sort of waiting around. And I drove by, and I sort of slowed to a crawl, and the cops then shooed me away. They didn't want me sitting around.
Yeah, the listener also, now they have the street blocked off. I think someone is getting tased.
Well, that's what I was hoping to see. I just sat around waiting to see if I would get to witness it. Because the thing is, I've never actually gotten to see the tasing in real life. It's always a thing I see in video, or we hear about it, or it's related to us.
And given the neighborhood you live in, you'd think... You know, what are the odds?
The odds of a tasing happening in my neighborhood, I think, are really high. There's probably one happening right now and probably every 10 minutes around the clock. It's just the cops never think to summon me for that sort of a thing. I think that ought to be a thing where, like, if you donate money, to the policeman's union, or if you offer to, like, if you do some sort of, some sort of assistance with them, community work, that in exchange you ought to get to trade that in, not for a beanbag or rather a tote bag or a coffee cup or some sort of a hat that says Multnomah County Sheriff's Department on it. You ought to be able to trade that in for the chance to go witness a tasing.
You should go talk to the people at wherever your community policing thing is and ask if you can do a ride-along on, like, a Saturday night on Southeast. And then I'll bet you would get to see a tasing.
I did a ride-along years ago when I lived in Washington State, but that was before the taser became so ubiquitous. So I think maybe it's time to do one again.
A Friday or Saturday night in Southeast, you're going to see a tasing, my friend.
So hopefully we'll find out exactly what happened to the sword-waving woman near my home.
I know.
So if anybody, Kirill or anybody kind of knows the outcome of that, you just make sure to let us know. Here's Don Taylor.
The Atlantic Public School System's interim superintendent Errol B. Davis Jr. replaced four area superintendents and a school principal in the wake of a cheating scandal that could lead to criminal charges against some principals and teachers. Davis Jr. says the schools will start clean next year.
Let's see, Georgia?
Yes.
I can say to the best of my ability that none of those who are implicated will be in classrooms when schools start this fall.
In addition, former board chairman Katim Sherer L. resigned his District 2 seat at a Monday night meeting. In a tearful farewell, he said Atlanta is facing a crisis of character.
It remains to be seen, no matter how deep this thing goes, whether the soul of Atlanta has really been stirred, whether or not Atlanta will recognize that it's facing a genuine crisis
recognize.
Of character. Character that is decaying.
What's with the post-nasal drip?
He's crying. He's tearful.
Intimidation and retaliation.
All right. Well, it doesn't mean we all have to hear it.
Yeah, you should try not to. This is my theory. I know I am an ugly, ugly crier. So I try to never cry in public.
No.
I don't ever want to cry in front of anyone because I am hideous when I cry.
I should say, this is one of the things that Eric D. Snyder was demonstrating, one of the qualities that makes him a fantastic fill-in person yesterday. Every time he had to make any sort of noise with his mouth that wasn't directly related to the news, he actually, he turned his head, he would sort of avert his head, and he would actually pull back from the microphone by like 5 or 6 feet. It was like, I expected him to go out into the hallway. Every time he had to clear his throat, he would do like, and he had a sneeze or something. It was like he was filled, as everyone should be, with the deepest, deepest shame about their bodily functions. And he wanted to make sure that no one had to witness it.
And I heard you'd use that as an opportunity to rag on me and my eating and breathing habits.
I find fault with that accusation.
I did hear that.
At what point did I do that?
I believe you were talking about me, weren't you? You were talking about him eating the cookies and stuff, and then you said something that he wasn't chewing directly into the microphone.
I made no such statement.
Unlike some other people that sit at that desk over there.
That is a complete fabrication. I made no such statement yesterday.
I heard it.
I made no statement about anybody eating directly into the microphone. At no point was that
and
said
breathing.
By me.
And you mentioned my breathing.
I did not. I defy you.
I will go back and find it.
I will give you all the money in my pocket if you can find a segment yesterday where I talked about you breathing into the microphone.
You said that person sitting at that mic where you are right now, which implies
I didn't say that either.
You said that other side of the desk there, you said. You did. I will find it, and I will prove it to you in the next hour. In between time,
that I talked about
it.
You breathing into the microphone.
You said, unlike some people who sit over there opposite.
Well, that could be any number of people, Dawn.
And who think it's attractive that you hear every breath in and out of the microphone.
Well, it sounds like somebody's projecting.
It was obviously about me.
What makes it obviously about you?
Because Eric was sitting in this chair.
Since the only characteristic mentioned in that sentence was the fact that someone breathes heavily into a microphone, there was no designation of gender, no designation of race or age there. The only characteristic I ascribed to whoever that was breathing heavily into the microphone.
And sitting,
are you saying that you breathe heavily into the microphone?
And sitting opposite
which many
you
people,
at the desk
which,
in this chair.
Which several people have done. So are you saying that you breathe heavily into the microphone?
I'm saying that it sounded like you were saying that I did.
No. Let's focus on one question at a time. Are you saying you breathe heavily into the microphone?
I did have an issue with that when we first started, yes.
Do you have that issue now?
I don't know. I didn't think I did, but
apparently I do. Then what makes you think I'm speaking about you, Don? There's any number of people that have sat over there and filled in. Any number of people.
So you're saying it wasn't about me?
I'm saying there is no evidence that I was talking about you.
You're going to tell me right now, though, Don, I did not mean you. You are completely out of line. You are completely incorrect in thinking this was about you.
I'm just saying.
Is that what you're saying?
I appear to be a blank canvas under which someone can project her neuroses. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
I somehow don't hear you denying that it was about me.
Well, no, because it's more fun this way. This way I get a day's worth of free entertainment. You're listening to the Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today, accurate, yes?
Yes, those are accurate.
Nazi watch, corpse watch, and something else that eludes me at the moment. True Blood recap, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so a recap of us.
Unless I have to spend all my time looking for that thing so I can prove that you actually said that.
Here's the thing. If it makes it easier in advance, I don't care. So True Blood recap from Sunday night. We'll get to that today, even though it is Tuesday. Also Nazi Watch, also Corpse Watch, and perhaps a recap or a follow-up on the woman who was waving a sword in my neighborhood and yelling at the cops about doing blow off a stripper. We can only hope. That is all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news and science on the march. Here is Dawn Taylor.
The CIA reportedly staged an elaborate fake vaccination program in Pakistan as part of its quest to pinpoint the location of Osama bin Laden in the weeks before Navy SEALs killed the Al-Qaeda leader. The Guardian reported Monday that the U.S. intelligence agency launched the project in March after officials had located what turned out to be bin Laden's compound in Abbottabad, but before they knew for certain that it was where he was hiding. The plan, according to the report, was to use a staged hepatitis B vaccination program in the town to obtain DNA from one of bin Laden's children to provide evidence that the family was nearby. The samples were to be compared to DNA obtained from bin Laden's sister, who died in Boston last year. While it remains unclear if the extensive scheme actually worked as intended, it's had the unintended consequences for the Pakistani doctor who helped stage the project. The doctor, Shakil Afridi, has been arrested by Pakistani intelligence officials for cooperating with the CIA.
How did we not know that Osama bin Laden's sister was living in Boston? They don't even want to release, what's her name, Casey Anthony, for fear that somebody's just going to go, like, whack her upside the head with a crowbar. How is it that Osama bin Laden's sister was just, like,
living
in Cambridge or something and just, you know, able, and just sort of hanging out, getting a bagel? That seems odd.
Well, I mean, we weren't really after her, so maybe we were okay with that. We went and talked to her, and she went, "Oh, I don't like him."
I don't really know that. I don't really know that the American mindset works that way.
The vaccination ploy also shows the lengths to which U.S. officials went to attempt to confirm bin Laden's location before launching the successful top-secret raid that killed him in May. Afridi originally started the project in a poorer section of Abbottabad in order to make the effort look more authentic. In the end, it appears as though one of his nurses was able to gain entry into the bin Laden compound to administer the vaccines, although it remains unclear if the nurse was able to verify his presence there through DNA samples or otherwise.
She was disguised as being a stripper gram. That's really the key to get inside.
That is just one of those things, though. When I hear about the CIA, this is the sort of thing I hope they're doing, are just clever things like that. Where, I mean, because that's an awesome plan. You're going, we want to find bin Laden. How can we find out for sure where he is? We want to get DNA. We think he might be in there. We want to get DNA from his kids. I know. We'll start now. We'll spend the next 3 weeks with this elaborate fake vaccination thing in the town. Start in the poorest part of town and work our way there. And by the time they get there, they go, oh, yeah, the vaccination thing. I heard about that on the news.
Why not?
Sure, come on in.
Well, that seems to make a whole lot more sense than just carpet bombing some entire country where he may or may not actually even be. And that's like, you know, I remember when the whole 9/11 thing happened, and I was talking to, it was actually Bruce Agler and I were talking about this, this is back in 2001, 2002, about whether or not it was actually going to be, because it was a fait accompli at that point that we were just going to be going into Iraq, like for no readily apparent reason, just, you know, like just on the score settling front. And Bruce actually made the point. He goes, "Well, he's like, you know, that's, he's like, that's not how these things are ever solved. He's like, you need to get a guy who's on the bridge with the umbrella that has the pointy poison thing in the tip of it," which is totally what this is.
Yeah.
Where it's like the CIA guy just passes you, you know, on the way to work as you're stopping at Starbucks and goes like, "Nink," and just, you know, yoink, and jabs you with some sort, you know, and he has like the Jennifer Garner ring from Alias that is, you know, has strychnine or something in it. So this is really the sort of thing that my tax dollars could support all day long. I have no issue with that.
Let's do science.
Oh, by the way, apparently Bin Laden has a smoking hot daughter who lives in the United States somewhere. Yeah. All right, excellent. I'm sorry, science here now? Yes,
yes, please.
Wait. And there we go. Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also call 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And that means they can come to your home, they can come to your business, they can make sure that your wiring is done right the first time if you're going to be building. My God, she is smoking hot. Wow. Hello. Hey. I'm sorry. What was I talking about? Ah, yes, one of our fine sponsors. They can handle the installation, the repair, the upgrade, or if you've got an inspection coming up, they can make sure that you're going to pass that the first time around. They can do everything from Ethernet wiring to the wiring that handles your inner office intercom system, into the actual wiring that brings power from a substation or whatever, right into your home or right into your business. If you're going to be expanding your office, maybe making one location into two, into three, into four, or if you just need to find out why things that were once working are no longer doing so, you can contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They're the proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
New research shows that snails can survive passage through a bird's digestive tract. One completely unscathed snail even gave birth to juveniles after plopping out from the journey in bird waste.
Plopping.
The study, published in the latest issue of the Journal of Biogeography, demonstrates how predation in some cases isn't all bad.
To whom are you speaking?
My computer. It made a noise at me because I didn't have it muted.
We all heard it too.
Yeah. This demonstrates how predation in some cases isn't bad for all prey. It's long been known that many seeds consumed by birds survive digestion and get a good start at growth after being spread on the ground in bird waste. Since the seed is surrounded by fertilizer, the process is akin to nature's farming. Now, this latest research shows how at least some mollusks benefit from a similar series of events. In the research, which was naturally led by a guy in Japan, over 174 land snails were fed to two bird species that have a taste for them, the Japanese white eye and the brown-eyed bulbul. 14.3% and 16.4% of the snails, respectively, passed through the gut alive, the researchers worked, adding that one snail also gave birth after what's been kind of a rather odd journey.
And it's really called the Japanese wide eye? That's ironic.
White eye.
Oh, okay.
White eye. The snail species is prevalent in the Ogasawara Island south of Tokyo, where the birds also live. The scientists conclude that land snails could potentially be dispersed through bird predation. So they can...
By predation, are you talking about poop?
I mean, birds eating them.
Okay,
and
right.
Preying upon them.
And then
pooping
them out
later.
And then the passing through the...
And the snails go, wow!
And the snails go, I had the weirdest dream.
God, that was strange. Hey, well, where am I now? God damn it.
Sort of like, it's like a wormhole, but not really.
Right. It's a bird hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last spacewalk of the space shuttle era is underway. Here, astronauts Michael Fossum and Ronald Guerin begin the 6.5-hour excursion.
Here we go.
You guys can disconnect your SCUs from the DCM.
Roger.
Okay. Oh, there's one.
Okay, this is one of those sound bites that it's impossible to tell when it's actually done, because every time they quit talking for a moment, it goes to absolute silence.
Also, the science music is very loud.
Let's see if I can play this again here. Hold on. Let's see. This is Shuttle 1, yes? Yeah. All right, let's see. Here is Shuttle 1. So this is... Give us the setup again.
This is Michael Fossum and Ronald Guerin beginning the 6.5-hour excursion.
By the way, I went out of my way to get these sound bites because I know that there's a lot of shuttle nerds in the audience who get all moist for this sort of thing. Hold on.
You guys can disconnect your SCUs from the DCM.
There is, in fact, this online radio station that I listen to out of San Francisco sometimes, and they have this. There's a channel they and it's just a bunch of ambient, just sort of drone music. But there's this channel they offer called Mission Control, and it's just if anybody was listening yesterday to the Rick Emerson show, and we were talking about the music put out by Wurzel, who was the guitarist from Motorhead, and he went on to I guess make several albums of ambient, which is just where like a guy fell asleep with his elbow on the middle C key of a keyboard or something. But it's this channel that is nothing but ambient music, and then in the foreground you have endless hours of NASA of like closed circuit mission control audio that plays. So it's just a whole lot of, and then in the background you have this playing.
You guys can disconnect your SCUs from the DCM.
Which I guess if you were high would just be the most fascinating thing ever.
Well, here they go through the initial tasks of the spacewalk.
Hey, guys, as required, check your visors.
Yeah, good call. My visor down.
There we go.
NASA commentator Rob Nevias has a call as astronauts Michael Fossum and Ronald Guerin venture into space.
The official start of today's spacewalk, 8:22 a.m. Central Time, as the two spacewalkers, Fossum and Guerin, place their suits on internal battery power.
So, there you go.
Hey, so that happened. Some men may literally have untrustworthy faces. Some men with wide faces more often deceived partners in negotiations and cheated on money-making games than thin-faced men did, say Michael Hasehune and Elaine Wong, both business professors at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. A heightened feeling of personal power reported by broad-faced men encouraged unethical deeds, according to the scientists. Physical traits that have evolved as signals of male dominance and aggression, including wide faces, also predict unprincipled behavior, they said. Broad-faced women showed no penchant for lying and cheating, however.
Somebody just typed LARS in all caps.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Extramarital affairs hold reproductive appeal for at least one group of women. Among African herders known as the Himba, adulterous encounters reported by married women account for 17% of the women's offspring. This was explained by behavioral ecologist Brooke Skelsa of the University of California, Los Angeles. Himba women who stray have more children who survive into adulthood than those who stay faithful. Women in arranged marriages sought affairs to escape parental authority and control reproductive decisions. Himba men leave home for long periods and tolerate adulterous wives because, in their view, additional children provide valuable labor.
Well, and as I think we've all learned from the Schwarzenegger family over the last few weeks, if you have a kid that, was implanted into you by somebody you probably shouldn't have been stooping, that's money in the bank, baby. That's 18 years of cash given to you. So, I mean, really, I mean, you know, if you have your own kid with your own husband, that's just paying. You know, if you have a kid with somebody else's husband, that's getting.
Plus, if you have kids with, you know, like the household help, you're basically breeding your own gardeners.
Yes, you are. That was probably Schwarzenegger's plan all along. Is this way it will be somebody who knows how to make my eggs Benedict the way that I like? That's my Arnold Schwarzenegger voice.
It's eerie.
Yeah.
In the United States, July marks the arrival of new trainees in hospitals and clinics. Over the years, both anecdotally and formally, researchers have suggested this annual changeover results in lower quality care for patients. Dubbed the July effect in America and the killing season in the United Kingdom, the idea makes sense. If you were receiving expert treatment at a hospital, wouldn't you prefer a doctor with a year's experience instead of a freshly graduated MD? But confirming July's reputation as being the worst month to be in the hospital has been difficult because methods, which doctors measure and statistics, vary among studies. One New York Times blog post claims most studies don't report a spike in July deaths. But most recently, medical doctors think they've confirmed the July effect after conducting an analysis of several studies. Their results are featured in this month's issue of the journal Annals of Internal Medicine. Although it's difficult to blame illnesses and deaths on the changeover of medical residents and doctors, the team confirmed an increase in mortalities and a decrease in efficiency among training hospitals in comparison to non-training settings in the month of July. The doctors assessed the methods of 39 studies and placed them in higher and lower quality groups. Better designed setups involved larger sample sizes, etc., blah, blah, blah. Of the studies, roughly 13 were considered good quality, and it turns out the strongest evidence for mortality increases in July came from higher quality work.
I demand that the Freakonomics guys investigate this right now.
Yes.
They've reached actually the status in my mind of being the only ones, apart from Thomas Gill, who I rely on to give me the absolute definitive truth about something. Really, if it doesn't come from those three people, there's just, I place, you know, 85% confident in it at most.
I can't remember which show I was watching. I think it was this new show, Suits, which is actually very good. And I could be wrong about that, but in the show Suits, one of the characters like spouted off some statistic about something, and the guy goes, "How do you know that?" And he looked at me and said, "Freakonomics!
Duh.
I gave you that book. Why haven't you read it?"
Which is, by the way, which is the thing that everybody who knows me is tired of hearing at this point, because that is, Freakonomics is like the literary version of The Wire, where it's a thing that I just nag people about year in and year out until they finally just break down and read it so I'll get off their backs.
That's all the science.
There's your science on the march, brought to you by Squires Electric at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/Squires Electric 503-252-1609. By the way, and I just now when I said Freakonomics and Thomas Gill, I very nearly said Freakonomics and Thomas Gill and Seamus, but then of course keeping with the law of three, I decided that three better than four, and then also it's like a wedding invite list where suddenly if I start adding people into the list of those who are trusted, then it's like I have to add everybody and I can't leave somebody out for fear of offending them, and so Seamus says, before I even had made that observation, Seamus says, "I'd like to think I can be trusted." And then he says, "But the fact is I'm tempted to lie just for kicks half the time." See, that's the thing, is I know that Seamus' intelligence, which is formidable, is spiked with just the occasional dose of just malicious glee at feeding me misinformation, or at least the temptation to do so. Whereas I think that Thomas Gill has some, like, first law of robotics thing in his head where he's just incapable of passing along incorrect science information.
I think that's true.
I think if he tried to do so, it would be like that Jim Carrey movie, and he would just have a complete nervous breakdown. Like, if he tried to lie to me about the number of carbon, atoms in something or whatever, like, it just wouldn't... I just don't think he would...
He'd just have a stroke and start twitching.
I think his brain would rebel, actually. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. That was your Science on the March. Coming up later on, you get your entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Here is Don Taylor.
The lawyer for a 20-year-old man who was wounded when Portland police mistakenly used real shotgun ammunition instead of beanbag rounds said he may have suffered permanent damage. William Monroe, 20, has been recovering at OHSU ever since the June 30 shooting. Officers were called to Lair Hill Park that day after getting a report of an intoxicated man who was harassing children. They confronted Monroe, who ran up an embankment towards Barber Boulevard. Police gave chase, and because they said Monroe was not complying with their demands, he was shot in the hip by 5 shotgun pellets. Officer Dane Reister said he thought he was firing less lethal beanbag rounds, but the gun had mistakenly been loaded with real ammunition. An investigation is ongoing to determine how the gun became loaded with real shotgun rounds. When reached for comment on Monday, attorney Thane Tinson said Monroe needed surgery after being shot in the buttocks. He said Monroe likely has permanent damage to his sciatic nerve on his left side, and it may lead to loss of mobility. In a news conference earlier this month, Mayor Sam Adams and Police Chief Mike Reese apologized to Monroe and wished him a speedy recovery.
So what was the guy shot for? Like, what was he doing that caused him to be shot, period?
He was drunk, and he was in a park, and people were finding him annoying and vaguely threatening because there were children around, and he was being a drunk ass. And somebody called the cops, and the cops
came. Right, and then there was the whole mix-up with the rounds.
And
but
then,
he wasn't.
And then he ran away, and they shot at him.
Was he like actually menacing somebody?
I don't think so. I don't think he had a weapon or anything. I think he was just, being. I guess he may have been shouting at people or something.
All right, because if that's all it takes, I got a long list of people in my neighborhood that could be shot with something or other.
You got
really,
woman with the sword right
seriously,
now.
Seriously, if we've lowered the bar that far, then I think that there's a great amount of house cleaning to be done in my neighborhood. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia on FM. Next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Nazi Watch, Corpse Watch, recap of Sunday's True Blood. We may or may not get to that top five that I've been trying to put together. And then, have you? Do you have that thing about Charlotte Church?
No.
Okay, we'll talk about it next hour.
Okay.
Just because it gives me a chance to ogle pictures of her on the internet, like in the guise of news. Because I'm saying, right, here's the thing right now about Charlotte Church. I'm not going to get into a whole deal about it. But
oh, Charlotte Church. I thought you said Cheryl at church, and I was trying to figure out why you would want to ogle Cheryl at church.
Well, I think the answer is obvious.
Okay. I mean, you know, Cheryl is definitely ogleable, but church particularly just seemed perverse.
No, there's this, no. That's what makes that even hotter, Don. You have no idea. It's like humping in a graveyard.
Oh, all right.
I'm sorry, Cheryl's listening. That's just very, it's all awkward. I'm just,
that's so inappropriate.
That's solely for purposes of amusement. That's the only reason I went down that conversational road. No, there's a story in the Daily Mail about Charlotte Church, who really, at one point, I'm not saying she occupies this place now, but at one point really was like the hottest single thing on earth, period.
Hotter than Christina Hendricks?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And by the way, you ask any guys may not know who Charlotte Church is, but if they do, if they know who she is, they will agree that there was this period of time where she was like the most scorchingly hot thing on the pale blue dot. So anyway, a little bit of news about her from a London tabloid, which is where all of the best Charlotte Church news comes. Here is Don Taylor.
Investigators say a 42-year-old Virginia man pretended he was a 19-year-old University of Virginia college co-ed and asked teenage boys on Facebook to send him naked pictures. James A. Dollins of Gordonsville, Virginia, was indicted on 15 counts of electronically soliciting minors for sex and soliciting for child pornography. And he's dreamy. We have a photo of him.
We have a photo of him. Is it disturbing?
Investigators say in May, a parent called the Louisa Sheriff's Office to report her 13-year-old son was contacted on Facebook by someone who claimed to be a 19-year-old Virginia student. Investigators say the student asked the child to text her nude pictures of himself. During the investigation, the Louisa Sheriff's deputies discovered the 19-year-old female was a persona created by the creepy, creepy 42-year-old Dollins. Investigators searched Dollins' homes and said homes. He has multiple homes. And say they discovered items and documents linking Dollins to 19-year-old Facebook profile of Kelly Redken. Couldn't even think of a last name. He just picked like a shampoo brand, apparently.
So Kelly Redken does in fact not exist at all.
No.
He was Kelly.
Yes.
Okay.
Investigators say Dollins, posing as Redken, had been in contact with multiple teenage boys in Louisa, Henrico, and Chesterfield counties, soliciting them for sex and or nude pictures. The contact started in October of 2010. Dollins was charged with two counts of solicitation for child pornography.
And you said, and these were underage boys that he was talking
to. Yeah, the one in particular is 13.
Presuming, and again, leaving aside the issue of them being underage, because you see this sometimes happens with guys who are out there trolling for hot man-on-man action with, like, adult, you know, with people who are young but still adults, you know, people who are 18, 19, 20, and they'll do this jive of getting online and pretending to be some hot babe, which just seems illogical and way too much work. I mean, because it... I mean, just guys being guys, it seems like if you believe the statistic that, you know, 10% of the population is gay or gayable, then I mean, really, how hard can it be to find some guy that is willing to give you the high hard one? I mean, it seems, you know, I mean,
look at all the penises that were on chat roulette.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not that hard.
Oh, this
to
guy's
find.
Really disturbing.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, his eyes like bore right through the screen and into your soul. You can see that at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for July 9th. Good God. He looks like, you know what he looks like? He looks like exactly the guy who coaches like a church softball league or something.
Yes.
Or offers to like drive you to, to your Godstock style youth weekend, you know, in his large minivan.
And well, he must be trustworthy. He's a church-going man.
Yeah, no.
No, not so much.
What did I say today with? Did I say July 9th? July 12th. That is a visual aids for July 12th at rickemerson.com/pictures. Here is Don Taylor.
I have some happy dog news.
Excellent. Here's your dog news for Tuesday.
Police in Centralia, Washington say they apprehended a burglary suspect after his dog was found at the scene of the crime. While investigating a string of burglaries that took place in the city on Sunday, police found a pit bull left behind at one crime scene. One of the investigating officers recognized the dog as belonging to a specific 19-year-old man. Police officers went to the man's home and allegedly saw some of the stolen items. They later returned to the search warrant and found more items that were reported stolen. The man was arrested and booked into the Lewis County Jail on residential burglary charges.
Good God almighty.
And I'm only assuming now that his dog will find a home with someone who isn't such a huge dumbass.
That's just one of those things, again, where, you know, the dog must just look at the cops and go, please, just anybody, just pick a random house somewhere and let me live there.
Can I go home with you? Because this guy, dumbass.
As your dog news for Tuesday, July 12th, 2011.
I love that so much. Okay. The public posturing and political gamesmanship continues about the...
What?
Political gamesmanship. I'm having trouble ending my words today for some reason.
It became like
Some of them are just going blah, 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 out of my mouth. They just...
It's like an ad hoc contraction.
Yeah.
Or like a Klingon word full of apostrophes.
We'll try this again. So there's all this stuff going on with the debt ceiling nonsense.
Okay.
Last Saturday... John Boehner said he would seek a deficit reduction deal half as large as the White House. He wanted $2 trillion instead of $4 trillion when he negotiated with President Obama on Sunday. Well, they all went to work on Sunday. The meeting lasted a little bit more than an hour, but the two sides agreed to resume talking on Monday and every day after that until the deal was done. At a White House press conference ahead of the latest debt negotiations with Republicans, the president said that he would not sign a 30-day, 60-day, or 90-day extension. Despite the long odds, the president is still pushing for what the White House has billed as a grand bargain on cutting the deficit and raising the debt ceiling. Obama said, "Let's step up. Let's do it. I'm prepared to take on significant heat from my party to get something done, and I expect the other side should be willing to do the same thing if they mean what they say."
Is he's calling it a grant like he's Cal Worthington or something, standing on a soapbox and just, next to a bear on a leash.
Yeah, Senate top Republican Mitch McConnell said on Fox News Sunday, "Nobody's talking about not raising the debt ceiling. I haven't heard that discussed by anybody. It's just at this point it's a matter of $2 trillion versus $4 trillion. And who's going to win? It's more a matter, I think, of who's going to win so that they can say, ha-ha, we bested you." Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell does say that President Obama is incapable of cutting spending.
"I have little question that as long as this president is in the Oval Office, a real solution is probably unattainable."
McConnell accuses Democrats of talking in code.
"When Democrats say investment, they mean government spending. When they say revenue, they mean higher taxes. And when they say shared sacrifice, they mean they want you to take the hit, not Washington."
Okay. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Also available at iTunes or via your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. And the Rick Emerson Show next hour at rickemersonshow.com. And somebody, who was it the other? Oh, it was listener Jordan who was here, who you met for like, who was here, I think, the day that you were gone altogether. It was like the day, it was one of those days that you just weren't here. Yeah. And he came by and I said, "Well, you got to come by in a couple weeks. Don will be here." And then he came by and like, you're like, "Hey, Jordan, I got to be back." And you were like, you were here for like 14 seconds or
and
something.
And then I saw him on Saturday at Trek of the Park.
Okay, so you did actually.
And we talked for a little bit. And then he said, "Well, I'm leaving in the morning." I was like, "Well, yay.
All right.
Nice to see you."
But he had asked about, he was having an issue with his nearly godlike iPhone 4. And I said, and it was, I think he was trying to use like some third party app or something to stream the show. And I said, no, it's much simpler than that. I said, just go to mobile.rickemerson.com. And so if anybody has not been using mobile.rickemerson.com and you've got a device which is so empowered, that is a way that you can listen and take the program with you wherever ye might go on this watery globe of ours. And it's mobile.rickemerson.com and everything else available at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday.
Well, I'm going to start the entertainment news by sharing an email I received an hour ago from Netflix announcing that they are changing their plan. If you currently get the stripped down unlimited streaming and one DVD a month plan, as I do, which costs $9.99, they're splitting that into two different plans.
Yep.
Unlimited streaming will be $7.99 a month. Unlimited DVDs, one out at a time, will be $7.99 a month. which means to get the same thing that you're getting right now, it will be $15.98 a month.
And really, I got to tell you, I'm amazed it took them this long to do this. I mean, they must have been running at a deficit, or at least substantially cutting into their profits for the last year or so. I am astounded that they didn't do this, you know, 18 months ago when everybody, like, when we all looked at each other and went, well, let's just start getting everything over the internet. Because, I mean, it...
And I, you know, the thing is, the problem with this is, I just find it really frustrating because I do use the DVD service for things, the occasional thing that they don't stream. Because there's a lot of stuff that they don't stream.
It's still cheaper than anything you would be able to get, though. I mean, it's this is one of those things, I think, that I understand people's frustration that the cost has gone up. But this is like a Moore's Law thing where you're getting more for your computing dollar than you were 5 or 10 years ago. If you think of what it cost to rent DVDs before we all started using Netflix, you're still saving like 80%. I mean, you're paying 20% maybe of what it used to cost you to rent DVDs.
Yeah. But it's still like, I know that I'm going to end up going with and doing probably what they're hoping most people will do, and I'm going to go for it. I'm going to drop the DVDs. I'm going to go for the streaming only, and then I'm just going to find, you know, an alternative for things that I can't get, you know, on their streaming service.
And apparently this is not a new change. I guess this change was made a long, long time ago. It's just that if you are an existing subscriber, you were grandfathered in, and they didn't force you to change until just now.
Well, yeah, and so anyway, that if you were grandfathered in, no longer, and those prices will start on September 1st. Nadia Suleiman, the Octomom, was flying back from New York City last night with she and her children taking up most of the business class section of the plane. The flight was delayed for more than 2 hours, and Nadia tried to silence her children, however, to no avail. The crying babies annoyed Third Rock from the Sun star Kristen Johnson so much that she marched over to the Octomom and told her to keep it down.
Fantastic.
Nadia's rep told TMZ that Nadia fired back, "How would you like me to keep 8 2-year-olds quiet?" To which Kristen allegedly responded, "Get more help." The rep says Nadia shouted back, "Why don't you grow a baby and get a life?" Because she's a genius. Eventually, Kristen returned to her seat, but according to Nadia's rep, Kristen got off the plane and never returned. She apparently decided she was going to find other transportation to New York rather than fly all night with the damn Octomom and her children.
There was a great story about the Octomom the other day, who by the way, has had some cosmetic surgery done. If you take a look at her.
Oh, yes, she has.
She had some things implanted. She was saying that she loathed her children. She says, "Well, I have to be honest, I just despise them." And I mean, which is, you know, sort of a sea change from just recently when she was calling them a gift from the Almighty.
Why does she keep popping them out then?
Well, to be fair, I think 8 of them came at once. It wasn't like she had the 8 sort of in rapid succession. But that was like the third batch of kids she had. And I think, and I mean, it was like, and weren't the first 9 kids she had, weren't they, I mean, haven't like all of her kids been diagnosed with something or other?
Well, I'm sure.
Like half of them are autistic and half of them just, you know, drool a lot.
I think so. It's just a shallow gene pool there. It's just really poor.
It seems like nature has given her every conceivable indication that she should not be reproducing.
Fox News reports that Mila Kunis has agreed to go on a date with a Marine.
The Marine guy, I saw that.
Yes. He posted a YouTube video last week asking her to be his companion at the Marine Corps Ball in November in Greenville, North Carolina. When she heard about it, she was actually appearing on Fox News at the time, and she heard about it, spoke quickly with her her publicity rep, and said, "I will do this."
Which is awesome.
"I will be there." And the clip I saw, Justin Timberlake, she was with her because they're promoting their movie Friends with Benefits. And she said to Justin Timberlake, will you go? And he said, "They don't want me. They want you."
Yeah.
He said, you need to do this for your country, he said.
Be a V-girl.
66-year-old rocker John Fogerty told Jam! Showbiz that the days of writer's block and depression are now in his past. "I finally managed to come out of those days," he said. "It was a conscious effort, and it sure didn't happen overnight. It took a long time, but I'm certainly not bitter. I don't focus on that stuff anymore except to say, boy, I'm a lucky guy." The musician added he's been writing new material for a new album, but has yet to record any of it. I had no idea that he had writer's block.
Well, it must be difficult to write things when every time you write a song, your former record company sues you, claiming that, suing where you end up in court for writing like yourself. I mean, that was the thing that caused him to have so much difficulty with writer's block, is there was that massive lawsuit with Saul Zantz, where he was accused of writing what sounded like a John Fogerty song, because, you know, he is John Fogerty. And so he's... That is a guy, and, you know, and he's, and don't get me wrong, I love John Fogerty. He is probably my favorite American singer-songwriter. But he's also like a raging prick in most ways, and maybe that has lessened as time has gone on. But so he was a huge grudge carrier. I mean, you saw any interviews with him over the last 15 years, and he was obviously just, you know, just at any given point stewing about a whole lot of things, which I think probably impeded with his artistic flow.
Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood are returning to host the CMA Awards, which airs on ABC November 9th. Underwood said in a statement, "Hosting the CMA Awards the past 3 years has been an incredible experience. I love it." Paisley added, "I love working with Carrie. She's a class act and a complete balance to my non-class act. I'll try my best not to mess it up."
Okay. We got like 15 seconds here.
Pressure. There's some movie that's going to be made with Jason Statham and Michael Chiklis called Parker, based on crime books written by Donald E. Westlake. It's going to be the about the exploits of a tougher than nails crook, played by Jason Statham. Jennifer Lopez is also in talks to star. Chiklis will play the villain. Previous versions of the Parker character were played by Lee Marvin in Point Blank and Mel Gibson in Payback.
Excellent. And there we go. Awesome. And with that, we bring the curtain down on another exciting episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. And you can take it with you on your mobile device as well. That is mobile.rickemerson.com. Coming up next hour, Nazi Watch, Corpse Watch, and more, plus a recap of Sunday night's episode of True Blood. So stay there, friends and neighbors. And if you are not yet a subscriber, you can go to rickemersonshow.com and do so for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. We come to you live from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, Representative Minister Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow at noon. Have a safe and satisfying Tuesday, won't you?